Welcome to another edition of Hobson's Choice Podcast. Very happy to have the presidential edition today with Eric Winston, the Bengals right tackle, who doubles as the NFL Players Association president. And thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Out of a very busy schedule, I'm sure. maybe not as busy as the other president, but I think it is as busy as the other president. I mean, I don't know how you do it. I'm just kind of fascinated about how you balance being a player and being the president of the NFLPA, of the union.
Yeah, I always say that two things. A, it takes a good team. I got a good team. The guys, our executive director, D. Smith, on down, the professionals in Washington, they understand my schedule. They know when I'm more free than others. They know when to bother, when not. They know what to take care of, and they do a fabulous job of doing that. And so, obviously, like I said, they take a lot off my plate that way. But I also say, too, I don't watch TV anymore. So, right. You know, it goes back, and it sounds it sounds like a dad speaking almost, but it comes back down to time management and scheduling and making sure that each minute you use is towards something that you're trying to accomplish. So, especially during the season and even now as we're getting back into football time, everything's plotted out for me. So I do this from 8 to 12, really 8 to 1 by the time you're eating
football
and going back. Football.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, if I got a string of emails, so I know that from there, then I got to take care of certain things. Certain people on parts of the country have to be called at certain times or conference calls. And I've gotten really good at using the notes in my in my phone, using the to-do list, and also using my calendar to schedule things, because you just have to keep it all. And it's not overwhelming from that sense. But I do think it's really causing me to do a lot of those, to really fall back on a lot of those time management skills that people always talk about. And I think it's made me a better player in a lot of ways, because I budget time better. I do things much more efficient and concise, and get things done. So I enjoy it. I love helping the players, but it definitely can be a time suck, and all you have to do is ask my wife about that.
Right. So. Well, I mean, during the season, this is kind of a little bit. It's obviously not easy, because it's a lot of hard work in the morning, but during the season, it's basically a 10-11 hour job. And then you get that on top of it. So do you do that stuff at night?
Sometimes. It just depends. Like, again, it goes back to managing. I remember a couple times last season, I woke up early to fire off some emails to make sure that they hit inboxes as they came into work. Yeah. Then I went to work. And then by the time I'm done at night, I could reply to whatever they sent me. So it comes in fits and spurts. You know, like I said, the people in Washington, they do an unbelievable job. Our general counsel, Tom DePasso, George Atala.
Tom DePasso is a former Bengal.
That's right. He's a former Bengal linebacker. Really, really sharp guy.
How has he helped you? Has he helped you a lot?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's a little bit of a yin to my yang. I'm a hard charger and want to do things quickly. He's very methodical, very smart, very thought out, and he's been around for a long, long time. I think he's been with the union now for over 30 years in different capacities. Yeah. And he's our general counsel now, and he's been really good to me in the sense of getting me to slow down a little bit, think through the things I want to accomplish and what's the best way to do them. And sometimes it's not always full speed ahead. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's to plot it out, take it slow, and to make sure that the buy-in is there and make sure that it's a lasting whatever I'm trying to do.
Does he ever talk about the old days in Cincinnati? Or
No, he does. He has he always asks how some, you know, it's amazing here. Obviously, there's so many long term employees here that I think there's still a couple people here where it was that when he was here. So it's pretty neat. He still reminisces every now and then, I know he likes Cincinnati. I know he liked his time here.
Yeah. Was there any guy when you were breaking in? I mean, I don't think you break into the National Football League thinking you're going to be to be the NFLPA president. Was there anybody that you watched or you saw or anybody who had an influence on you? Who said maybe take a run for it?
Mark Bruner was a tight end my rookie year in Houston.
Yeah,
and he was there I think 2 years. My first 2 years in Houston, And really, it started out with a more of a football mentorship where, you know, I watched him prepare for practice, watched him lift, and he was nice enough and just one of the nicest people I've ever met in the NFL, Mark Brunner, former Steelers tight end.
Right.
And just a wonderful, wonderful person. And he was kind enough really just to kind of take me under his wing and teach me what it meant to be a professional, teach me what it meant to do things right. And it just so happened he was an executive committee member, meaning that he's one of the 10 vice presidents of the union. And he was for, gosh, I think at least his last 4 years, if not longer. And I had a lot of questions randomly, and he always said, hey, you should come to a meeting. You should come to one of our meetings. And he was kind of the guy that, I wouldn't say dragged me there, but he was one of the ones that suggested for me to go. And then from there, it was just a general curiosity about how things worked. And
did anybody say, hey, you ought to go for it? Anybody say you ought to go
the president's part? Yeah, you know, we had a big turnover. So how it happens is it's an active players union. So once you're done playing, you're termed out, right? And so, you know, for instance, there's some guys that have retired, but you still run your term out, and there's 2 year terms.
Yeah.
And so we happen to have a lot of guys at one time. The president, Dominic Foxworth, before me, was termed out, and he was going off. And we had a lot of those executive committee members moving off.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on neither. And usually the president comes from one of those executive committee spots. And I had a couple older guys that just said that, you know, for whatever reason, they knew I was on a lot of committees that we hold, and I was just active, opinionated. And a lot of guys had just said, hey, you should think about it. And I told them at that point, I said, hey, listen, if I'm nominated, then I'll do it. But I'm not going to go campaigning around trying to push my position. Whatever the guys feel like would be the best place to put me, then I'll serve. And Matt Hasselbeck nominated me and made my little speech. And they
what was your platform? What was your platform?
It's not so much a platform as I think it's for what I hold. Obviously, you have to have opinions, and I think
this is
it's
what, your
important.
Second term or your third?
This is my second term.
Third term, yeah.
And I think it helps if you have your own ideas, obviously. But I also think it's a leadership role more than anything. I do think there's, like I said, our professionals in Washington handle so much of the policy stuff, and we guide. And I always say we're the people. Our players are the guys that say this is what we want, and the professionals figure out how to do it. And that's how it's always been. That's how it always will be. But, you know, I had a lot of my ideas that I've put out there. But I also feel like, for me, this role is one of leadership and one of, and it's, and convincing guys and showing guys that it's okay to be outspoken. It's okay to stand up and be accounted. It's okay to say this is what's right and this is what's wrong. And I think for a long time, guys, for a lot of different reasons, have been afraid to do that. Guys have been afraid to, you know, whether it's the commissioner, whether it's just something, the fans, whatever it might be, that they felt was wrong, they kept quiet because there's a lot of uncertainty in this business.
What do you like about it? What do you like about the job?
I love helping the guys. More than anything, I love problem solving and trying to help guys. We had a guy, I'll try to be as vague about it as possible because it's pretty personal, but he wasn't an American citizen.
Yeah.
He was in camp, and he was kind of a maybe not make the team. He wasn't vested yet, so he doesn't hold. So once you're vested, you get 5 years of insurance, health insurance once you leave. So he wasn't vested yet.
Right.
So if you don't make the team once you're vested, your insurance runs out like at the end of September.
Right.
He thought he might have cancer, a reoccurrence. And so now it's, okay, how are we going to take care of this guy if he doesn't make the team? Because A, he's going to lose his health insurance, but on top of that, he might get deported.
Jeez,
It's okay. How can we help him? Now some things took care of themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, he stayed on the team and things of that nature. And but it's something like that was, I was happy to jump into the middle of it. I was happy to try to figure it out. I was happy to connect him with the right people in our office too to help. And there's a lot of little things like that. And it's not, you know, I would say, give you another example, but a lot of people would say, well, that's not that big of a deal. But to that player, it's a big deal. I'll say whatever it might else be. Oh, my girlfriend is sick. But she's not on my insurance. But obviously, you know, how do we work this, or whatever it might be, and even outside the healthcare space, you know, I'm hurt. Do I, you know, what do I do, or this is what happened in minicamp, or whatever it might be, and to a lot of people, that's it's trivial. It's something that's not a big deal. But to these players, this is. At the end of the day, this is what they do. This is their livelihoods. And so it's a big deal to them. So I always try to make it seem like it's my own problem, because if I do that, then I know how and understand how important it is to them. And that's what I like about the most. The business aspects of it and going through, that's cool for me. I enjoy the business. I enjoy the intersection of politics as well into it. But at the end of the day, for me, if I can, you know, guys that come up to me after the end of the game, hey, I appreciate you for doing X.
Yeah.
Speaking out, helping me out, doing whatever it is. Man, that's why I do this.
You got an interesting, you're almost kind of born into a political family a little bit. And I know you've liked politics for a long time, but tell us about, I think it's your grandfather in Massachusetts, right?
He was kind of a local politician of sorts, if you will. He's from outside of Springfield, Massachusetts, in a town called Agawam. And
this is your maternal grandfather?
Yes, my maternal grandfather, Julio Albagini. He was kind of a little bit of a jack of all trades. He was the postmaster general, or I don't know if it was a postmaster general. That's not the right way. Nationwide.
It's postmaster. It's probably just
the postmaster. Postmaster. Town, right. He was the postmaster for the town at one point. He was the he formed and was the head of the city council. At one point.
Local civic leader.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he was an organizer of sorts. And it's funny because at his funeral, when he passed, when I was a senior in high school, I heard many stories of gentlemen around his age or a little younger coming up to me and telling me how, you know, there was one guy that he wanted to be a building inspector, but he didn't know how to read very well. Educationally went to see. So my grandfather apparently sat down with him and taught him. He read the building inspecting code and then taught him the building inspecting code.
How about that?
And then there was another guy who was a younger man, and he actually was in the House of Representatives for Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And he mentored him through the process of running and how to run and what he's doing. And so it was so heartwarming, you know, at a sad time to see this and hear some of these stories. As a kid, I always was trying to bring it out of him, but he never would bring it out. Going back before that, when he was a little bit of a younger man, he was involved with John F. Kennedy's senatorial campaign out on the western side of Massachusetts. Right.
He must have done a hell of a job, because in 58 he won a crushing victory in 58.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, those kind of things, I just think they're. It's really interesting, and I wish
about that kid.
He didn't. You couldn't get him to talk about anything. You couldn't get him to take credit for anything.
Yeah.
You couldn't. You know, if you brought that story, oh, Grandpa, you know, this guy told me you taught him the whole. Oh, no. I just clarified a certain section for him. You know, he would never take credit. He was never boisterous about the things he had done. I remember when Clinton was elected. He was invited, him and his wife were invited to the inauguration. I won't go. Yeah. I won't go. You know,
Did you grow up in a home that was politically interested?
You know, I don't know if it's political. I think politically aware would probably be a better, you know, term. Knowing a little bit of my grandfather's background, I would ask him a lot of questions and have a lot of questions for him, and then. You know, so that my mother, my stepfather, you know, they'd watch the news. My father watched the news at night. Hey, we're going to watch the nightly news. And obviously there's politics on that. But for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's genetic or what, but I always was interested in what was going on politically and who was running against who and what the issues were.
Do you have any heroes? Or guys you looked up to, or guys
I wish I had more. Wish I had more.
You're born in what? You were born in what?
83.
You were born in 83. So it's the early Reagan.
Yeah, early it was Reagan. Kind of the early Reagan. I don't really remember much of Reagan.
Yeah.
Maybe a little speech, maybe at the very end. I remember HW a little bit. Then yeah. Clinton was probably my first.
But you're coming out. There.
Yeah, I mean, I was 9, 10 years old. I remember a lot of those Clinton years.
Yeah.
Not the ins and outs, but I remember him being elected. And I remember the running, and then, of course,
well, you're very well informed because we'll walk in.
Yeah, of course,
talking in. You'll be telling me stuff.
Yeah, W. Bush and Gore. That was obviously I was in late in high school.
Yeah.
So really know that. Yeah, I think it's politics is an interesting beast, and I think the way it's changing is a little scary in the sense of. It doesn't seem, in the past at least, and who knows, you read some of these history books and it's like history is still repeating itself.
Right.
Like, Trump's this person and Obama was this person back in the day. And, and so you always think, because it's new to you, that this is a new occurrence for the country.
Yeah.
And, any good historian will tell you, like, no, that happened 50 years ago when this guy ran or whatever. And so I try not to get too riled up about any of it because, like you said, it seems like everything still repeats itself.
Yeah.
But
people are saying we have a there's a recurrence now in the country. People are interested now because we've had such a year of disruption.
Yeah.
That things are so much different. Do you get that from the players? Are the players more politically in tune than maybe they have been in the past?
Yeah, I had one player that I didn't even think watched politics ask me about North Korea. I didn't even think he ever looked at the
different
news.
Different kind of long
exactly, ball. Exactly. Yeah. So that's it is. But I was just going back to what I was saying, the thing that it seems to me, at least in my childhood, was that even though there were political differences, it seemed that they were always trying to work and negotiate and find some middle ground.
Yeah.
And some things, you're not going to agree on, and that's it. But now it seems more of a thing where you're trying to beat your opponent so you can implement your direction just unilaterally.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's good because at the end of the day, and what you saw, whether it's with Obamacare or whether it's now or whatever, you get no buy-in from the general public.
Yeah.
You get no, and the like someone said a week or two ago I was reading, at the end of the day, policies that last were bipartisan policies.
Yeah.
Really good laws at the end of the day that last are things that had buy-in from both sides. And I think that's something that we're going to have to figure out going forward. But the bifurcation of America continues in the sense of it definitely seems that for instance, you go back in 2000 and you look at Bush's platform, you look at Gore's platform. You're talking about degrees, right? You're talking about, well, I think we should do a $300 million tax cut. And no, I think we should do $900 million. Okay, well, both, you know, we're talking about degrees here. I think we're doing it. And it does seem like our politics have skewed a lot. And I think that has to do with a lot of different things. But it is definitely worrisome from the sense of we're all going to have to figure it out together. And that's something that it confuses me in a lot of ways, but at the same time, I think it's scary because when the politicians are skewing that way, I also see society skewing that way as well. And it shouldn't be like that.
Switching gears, growing up in Midland, Texas, football hotbed. I grew up in New England, and back in the 70s, football was 1 o'clock game Saturday afternoon. Yeah. Maybe you fit it in between, antique show and it's just kind of you shoehorned it in there. Midland, Texas, Friday Night Lights before there was Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
Right? What was that like growing up in a football, basically a football town, football factory?
It was really a sports town with an emphasis on football, but it was awesome for a kid that grew up playing football, basketball, and baseball. As intensely into sports as I was, my family was, my older brother, my younger brother was, and a lot of the community was, it was awesome. We don't have a college there. I mean, we have a junior college. That's about it. Texas Tech's 2 hours away. UT's 5 hours away.
Yeah.
TCU, SMU are 5 hours away. I mean, we're in the middle of nowhere out there.
Yeah.
And all we have is each other. And the whole town really rallies around. It's all a town. I mean, it was 100,000 people when I was there. It's like 150 now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a decent-sized city. But the whole city that's the one thing that brings everybody together. Yeah. And I thought that was always so cool. And it was just neat knowing that you're a part of, and you're playing in a game, a high school football game, where there's 10,000 people there, yeah, and it's a district game. Yeah. You know, it's just like a regular district game, and all these people there to watch you play.
Yeah.
And when I was growing up, you know, my dad would take me to these high school football games, and my dreams weren't playing in the NFL, or it was, man, I want to play for the Rebels on Friday night. That's it. That's what I want to do. I want to play for the Rebels on Friday night.
Everything's gravy, everything else is gravy.
And the thing was, is my dad's like, hey, if you know, your goal should be to get someone to pay for your college.
Yeah.
To get a scholarship from anywhere. It wasn't to go to Miami and play tight end and play tackle. It wasn't try to win. It was just, hey, if you can sucker somebody into paying for your college, that's the gold mine. That's like, that's the holy grail. Yeah. And but at the end of the day, it was wearing the big L on the side of your helmet for Lee and playing for the Rebels, and it was awesome.
It was a great team.
Right? It was a great team. I mean, that was the other thing that's, you know, for a long time in Midland, we had really good teams. We'd end up getting beat by a Metroplex team in the quarterfinals right before the quarterfinals. But when I was there, obviously, I grew up with Cedric Benson, Bengal, and great player at UT. And I would tell you this, I probably, without a doubt, one of the top 10 Texas high school players of all time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and people don't realize the players that have come in. And I could probably make an argument to get him closer to the top as well. Yeah. But he was amazing. But we just had this confluence of really good players. Right. And for a long time at Lee, we were known for a great execution, hard-nosed playing, but there wasn't a lot of D1 guys there even. Right. There just wasn't. I mean, if you went D1 out at Lee, that was a big deal. It wasn't like the team had five or six guys every year that went to Texas. It wasn't like that. And all of a sudden, over about a five-year period, we had this just an unbelievable amount of talent on our side of town.
Yeah.
Because there's two high schools, Midland High, Midland Lee, and it's split right down the middle. You live over here, you go to Lee. You live over there, you go to High. This is in a private high school where you can pick where you go. Yeah. And we had, you know, handfuls of D1 guys. You had Cedric, myself, Josh Norman came before us. He played in San Diego for a little bit, played at OU, and played for the Chargers. I might have played 3 or 4 years for the Chargers. Had a lot of guys that were D1 guys, played at Tech. Yeah. And it was played at New Mexico State, had opportunities to go other places. And with that, we still had that 5'11", 225-pound linebacker that made 200 tackles in a year, too. So when you added all that together and you added a bunch of guys that were very capable with that mindset of hardworking and being exact on everything you're doing, it was a recipe for something special. And you mix in a great coach, John Parchman, who is a little bit of a high school coaching legend there, who had bounced around and come back to Lee. And it was unbelievable. It was just that 3-year stretch of three straight high school championships that never happened before.
Yeah.
And it was as much fun, I think, as I've ever had playing sports. And I say sports town because Midland High, when I was an eighth grade or a freshman, they won state in basketball, and then a year or two later they won state in baseball, and then I got beat my senior year in the state semifinals in basketball.
What did you play? What position did you play?
I played post, five, and four, and
Did Sed play basketball?
No, he played baseball though. Okay. Remember, Sed was drafted.
He
plays a great baseball player. So. Yeah. When I say it's a great sports city with an emphasis on football, the emphasis was always football.
Did that shape your outlook, you think?
Oh, of course.
Growing up in that town?
Oh, of course. Yeah. You know, at the time, oil was, you know, it's an oil town.
Right.
That's it. And there was a bunch of independents. There was no big companies there. It's all your dads and your friends' dads are out there grinding for going after the same thing, really.
Right.
And everybody, you know, oil was under $20. And the old saying was, man, if oil could just be $20 a barrel and gas could be so-and-so, we'd all live a happy life out here. And so that tells you, I mean, oil's $55, and this isn't that long. This is 15 years ago.
Right.
And everyone's clamoring for $20 a barrel of oil. So that was the mindset. And I think every kid out there saw their parents get up and grind every day. And that shaped us to go out there and there was
no. What'd your dad do for a living?
So my father was a principal for a long time at the junior high level and at the elementary level. Yeah. My stepfather was an independent oil operator, and my mother was a nurse. My mother worked 6 a.m. to 2, and she ran the same day surgery. And my father got up early and ran the school and one of the schools, and my stepfather did the same thing.
Grinders.
And that was exactly, and it was competitive.
Yeah,
and that's where I think all of us were shaped that way.
Yeah.
And we were all shaped to be very, very hardworking and competitive.
Yeah.
And so that was a neat experience. And anybody that's lived out there can tell you it's a little bit of a special place because of that.
Something I find fascinating is the Bengals were always seen as a hard line team back when they started, you know, and maybe the last team you'd think they would have the NFLPA Players Association president would probably be Paul Brown's team and Mike Brown's team. But I think you've enjoyed the experience being here with them, I think.
Cincy's been great. Mr. Brown's been great. He's been really gracious to me and always nice enough to come up and let me know that. Let me know that I've brought something here and helped them, and that's, you know, obviously what you want to do.
You guys ever talk politics?
We don't. You know, that was the one thing he ended up, you know, it was my first season here, or my first full season, so my second year here, because I came in, you know, a little after halfway in my first season, and he's like, he just told me, Eric, I don't want you to think I'm ignoring you or something. I just don't want to mix the two, and I appreciated that, and I never thought of anything before, but you know, that's the way he's always operated. That's the way I've kind of always operated, and I've always operated with that with the media too. I feel like, you know, locker rooms football, if I need to say something, then I'll say something, but I usually try to refrain from saying stuff inside the building for obvious reasons. But no, it's been great, and Mike's been great. Marvin, I've known Marvin a long time because he's on the competition committee, and I used to go to the competition committee even when I was just a rep.
Yeah.
And so we've gotten to know each other, and I think that helped. All that helped bring me here.
Yeah.
And obviously, Andrew Whitworth and I we played each other in high school.
Mythical national championship.
No, that was a season after, but close. They were good that year. We were the year Cedric's senior year was the year before we played.
Okay. Yeah.
And I wish those two teams would have played because they were both of those teams were so good.
Yeah.
All those things kind of collided to help bring me here, and this is going into my fourth season, and it's gone like this, but I've had a great time. I like Cincy a lot. It's a great place. My family likes it a lot, and the organization is great too.
The Bengals raised some eyebrows when they drafted Joe Mixon, and I don't know if you had any thoughts on that. The locker room seems to be pretty well, you know, hey, if the kids the kid deserves a second chance.
Yeah, right? I look at it as, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, and it sounds like he's atoned for the things that he's done.
Yeah.
And it's time to move on. And it, you know, listen, every guy's judged on what he does when he's here.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and are you a good teammate? Are you ready to go? Are you a professional? And that's what I'm going to look at him as is. And we all want to do the right thing off the field as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes without saying, you know, and I think 99% of the guys across this league are great individuals. And I think in any population, you're going to have bad apples here or there, but I think Joe Mixon's got a great opportunity, and I hope he seizes it. I hope he uses that opportunity to really just be everything he can be or wants to be. But he's got to put the work in, he's got to grind, he's got to do what he's supposed to do, and he's got to grow up and do all those things that I had to do when I was a rookie.
Right.
And it's not an easy path, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I guess one of the issues too is, you know, they didn't let him go to the combine. I don't know if you guys are going to get involved in that at all.
I think it's a little crazy in the sense of, you know, at the end of the day, combine is a job interview.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is we want to deny certain people the opportunity to work. Not the work, the opportunity to work. At the end of the day, the teams decide who they want, who they don't want. Right?
Right.
So at the end of the day, the NFL is saying that – and the NFL, oh, by the way, doesn't control the combine, but somehow does control the combine. That's another interesting and kind of fallacy about.
Sorry about that. I said we weren't going to talk about issues.
Yeah, no. But it is. It's one of those things where you're basically saying, I'm going to deny you the opportunity or try to deny you the opportunity to work. Yeah. Doesn't sound logical. It sounds a little ridiculous in a lot of ways, I think, kind of un-American. Yeah. Now, if the teams don't want to draft them, the teams don't have to draft them.
Right.
And not just Joe, but anybody else, right?
Right.
So it just seems... Yeah, kind of crazy.
I guess I just bring it up because Joe's here now.
It happened to him, and it's happened to a lot of other guys. I always think, let's shine a bigger light and let's see, is he worthy to be here? Is he someone that the teams want? And at the end of the day, I think you're just making it harder on the teams to make a proper evaluation of somebody.
Now, I think Vinny Ray's our rep, right? He's our rep. Are you grooming him? Vinny's a pretty he's a pretty impressive guy.
Yeah, Vinny's a great guy. Clint Bowling's also associate there. Pyramid said piece does it as well. All those guys do a great job, and I'm really proud of our representation. Yeah. It's always 100% at the rep meetings. They're all there.
Yeah,
they're always
pretty solid guys.
They're great guys. Yeah. You know, in the locker room has more guys in there that I think would be involved if their name is called, and I think that's important too. You're not always going to have guys that want to be the reps, but at the end of the day, we want a locker room full of guys that if I need you, you know, are you gonna come if I call? And I think we have a locker room full of those guys, and I think that bodes well for the team too, because it shows you what sort of leadership and it shows you what sort of men are in here as well.
What does the future hold for Eric Winston? What does political office beckon?
I don't know. Not at this time. I can tell you that. It seems like we were talking earlier. It's so toxic. Yeah. It doesn't seem like a place for any pragmatism at this point. But I never say never. I would like to say closer to the game, possibly, in some role.
Maybe with the NFLPA, perhaps.
Maybe, or just it's anything. I would consider a lot of different roles. Uh-huh. Maybe go back to school.
You got your degree from Miami?
I got an international finance degree and a marketing degree from Miami.
What would you go back to school for?
Maybe go get an MBA, something like that. Both of my brothers have one, so I can't let them one-up me. I got to outdo them somehow. But, I've done a lot of media things.
Right.
Obviously, that's something in the back of my mind. Right. So I've always tried to open up as many doors as possible. And we'll see what happens when you go through. But I want to do something that is meaningful to me personally and also to other people around. I love to help, and we'll see what happens when that day comes.
Hey,
I'm happy to be here.
Well, I guess, aren't we all? Yeah. I guess, right? It's the way the game goes. I can't thank you enough for spending time. We could do this again.
Absolutely. We could go mid-season edition.
Absolutely. We could keep talking. Thanks a lot for coming by, Eric, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.